Today's session is about American healthcare. And I'm Don Russo, the speaker. We'll look at healthcare in America through this week. Each session, each day is at a different time. Today's session is look a little bit at the history of the values, some of the values in American healthcare. I come from a small town in Oregon. I work full-time at a hospital there, and part-time I teach at the college next door. There's some familiar faces here, the I's and C's, who are also from Klamath Falls, Oregon. Rural Oregon, right?
Rural Oregon.
Yeah, we're from rural Oregon. But American healthcare is ubiquitous. I mean, from coast to coast, you would find very similar experiences in any American hospital with American physicians and American nurses and American people. And sometimes we don't really understand a lot of how all that works. Sometimes things happen that you may not expect. And yet profound things happen in healthcare. When illness or injury strikes, it's a big deal. It's big. If you think of your own examples recently with hospitals, with illness or injury, with physicians and the medical system, was it not, you know, something that was, you know, significant in your life? And it's become a significant part of America's economy, America's culture, that we thought it might be worthwhile to look at a little bit about how all this works. How did it come to be? What drives American healthcare? And the question we're posing, just as for discussion purposes, do fear, power, and money drive American healthcare? Or do something else? So let's look at things in that light. And really, to start, let's define healthcare. we're common with the terms medicine, doctors, hospitals. What do we mean by healthcare? there's a number of ways to look at it. Let's look at healthcare from a scientific, you know, from in scientific terms. How would we define healthcare? We think of medicine as science. Is that right, Joe?
Partly.
Medicine is science. It's dominated by science, we'll say. So, as a scientific view of healthcare, how would we define it? Healthcare. We might say healthcare is, from a scientific perspective, it's a response to illness and injury. Fair enough? A scientific response to illness and injury. That's one approach, a very strong approach in America. When something goes wrong, we're about fixing it. And how do we fix it? Through science, technology. Very, very strong. Broken leg. You want that scientist, that technologist that's capable of repairing that broken leg. The evacuation that happened here, when was that, last night or this morning? The helicopter we heard this morning, it was an alarming sound up here. An evacuation is a high-tech thing. So we look at medicine, we look at healthcare as a scientific response to illness and injury. Okay, what other ways can we look at healthcare? You want to define it. Let's define it in economic terms. That's important today, a big deal. From an economic perspective, how would we define healthcare today? As a business. It's a business. It's a business of an exchange process. Goods and services in return for payment. It's definitely a business. So we say healthcare is a big business, and it's an exchange process of goods and services. This for that. Quid pro quo. We have to have this business aspect to it to make sure people get paid for their work, make sure we have enough supplies and pharmaceutical drugs and things like that. So we have an economic perspective, very, very strong today. How about as a national policy? We say we have a policy on healthcare. U.S. policy, what would we say is our policy on healthcare? How do we define healthcare from a U.S. policy perspective? Any words that you'd put to that?
Well, there's a refusal to accept single-payer approach.
All right, there's a refusal to go to national insurance where one payer pays for everybody. And there's a struggle going on there, isn't there? Some of them think it ought to be done this way and that way. And from a national healthcare perspective, we might say that we might define healthcare as how best to meet unlimited needs with limited resources. Maybe we could say that, huh? Unlimited, you know, lots and lots of needs, but not all of the resources to provide for those needs. Some don't get everything that they may need. So we have a policy, we have a national policy. Since we're at Holden, let's look at it from a spiritual perspective. How would you define healthcare from a spiritual perspective? We don't have to be all physicians to deal with healing, right? How would you look at healthcare? We say this big term, healthcare, from a spiritual perspective. Any thoughts on that?
Looking at the person as a whole person, body, soul, spirit, mind.
Mm-hmm, that's good.
Emotion.
Mm-hmm. Look at the whole person.
Harmony between the person and all of reality.
Harmony.
Mm-hmm. I think you have to shift from a fix-it afterwards perspective to how do you keep wholeness before the problem develops.
Health. Emphasize health a little bit more ahead of illness. Mm-hmm. Let's try this one. Healthcare is the struggle to do good in the face of the inherent imperfections of humanity. Does that fit for a Holden definition of healthcare? Does that help? Does that fit? Healthcare is the struggle to do good in the face of the inherent imperfections of humanity. Okay, let's look at that definition as our Holden definition for healthcare this week, and look at how does that work? How did it evolve? Where's it going? That'll be the topic of a forum. When's the forum? Wednesday night, I think. American Healthcare, where is it going?
Tuesday night.
Okay, so let's look at the history a little bit. We go back. Yeah. We want to get to American healthcare, this uniquely American thing, but there's a lot of parts of what's American that really comes from Western culture and civilization. Medicine and Western civilization is a topic now being written about quite a bit. And Healthcare USA, a uniquely American thing, surely has strong elements, you know, from our Western culture and tradition, our history of Western culture and tradition. And the same, you know, these are just new texts that are writing about this stuff. I'm not really making much of this up. But let's go back to the Greeks and the Romans and our look at history. What values came from the Greeks and Romans that are still strong forces driving American healthcare? What might some of those be? Pardon?
To do no harm.
Good. That's really good. That's a. Who was the author of that phrase?
Hippocrates.
Hippocrates. You know the name, Hippocratic Oath. And one of the phrases in that Hippocratic Oath that's still important, very important today, is first of all, do no harm. And what medical ethics calls non-maleficence, right? You know that word. That's one word, but non-maleficence. So where's the Latin roots in there? You see that? First of all, do no harm. No bad. Non-mal. No bad. Someone comes to you, injured, ill, asking for your advice, your help. I need your help. Don't hurt them. Okay, that is so strong. That's from the Greeks forward. It's still very, very strong today. And the physician or the healthcare provider who does not live up to that gets the attorney coming after them. That's tied to our legal system, the civil courts, and the tort, the lawsuit, in civil court against this provider who cut off the wrong leg or somehow made a mistake is coming right from Hippocrates. Am I right, Joe? First of all, do no harm. Florence Nightingale, you know the name, a nurse from Britain who decided that things had to be better in the war fields, the battlefields, where victims of the casualties of war were lying in their own blood and mud and dying because nothing much could be done. First of all, do no harm. Her thing was cleanliness. Clean them up. That was her interpretation, and that's where nursing, that's the foundation of nursing, comes out of Florence Nightingale. Back to Hippocrates, first of all, do no harm. Let's first keep something worse from getting, from harming our patients further. Okay, so that's a really good one. Now, even before Hippocrates, there was something about the Greek way that was unique in history, and it still dominates healthcare today. This what's the R word that dominates healthcare? It's really a world of.
It's not what you're thinking of, but the medicine was done by priests rather than medical people in the ancient.
But the Greeks said, and Hippocrates, one of those early guys who said, let's not blame it all on the gods. Isn't there something more we can figure out about what's going on around here? Can't we reason this out? There's the R word. So healthcare today is dominated by reason. American healthcare runs on reason. It's the dominant factor. Now, it's not the only factor, and I'm not saying it's the most important, but it is so strong that to not regard the reason, the reasoning in medicine is to be out there getting in trouble some way. So, reason. Now, where did this come from? What was it about the Greeks that they looked at and said, can't we figure this out? The empirical method, right? The scientific approach comes from the Greek philosophers. Socrates, and I'm sure you know of this, but to put it in some relationship to healthcare, Socrates believed that it was possible. He said knowledge of the good is possible through reason. So it's important to be a man, to be a human, to be fully human, is to become knowledgeable of the good, to know knowledge of the good. And we do that through reason. That was the Socratic approach and the Greek philosophers. Now, carry that on through the ages. That is then what becomes in the Renaissance period, the beginnings of our universities. And we'll get to the Renaissance here, just a couple of more values here. Knowledge of the good made one elite, the Greeks felt. You've heard this before. Knowledge of the good. Now, what is the good? You know, what did Socrates and these Greeks mean by knowledge of the good? That's a philosophical view of life, of understanding what it is to be human. But it fits with healthcare. What it is, what is it to know to be human? Medicine, healthcare is all about knowing what it means to be human, to be ill, to be well, how to fix what's broken, how to avoid those things. So we can look at, and healthcare looks back to the Greeks for a lot of these original values, even though many in healthcare today would not begin to talk about these things. These values are within the history of healthcare. And part of our dilemma today is what values are stronger, what values dominate, and we don't want to lose track of these. We want people to know about these values, especially those who work in healthcare, to not lose track of these things. Another one, the Romans, they took it a step further. Knowledge made one elite. Knowledge makes one elite. So in medicine, those who become knowledgeable, those who have initials after their name, become elite. And in healthcare, it's a club, and it is an elite club. To work in healthcare requires certain credentials, certain training, certain initials, certain degrees, certifications, and all. And that is the Greek value of knowledge makes one elite. Okay, so those in healthcare are elite. Would we say that? You may not agree, but those in healthcare believe it. They believe they are elite. Another one. Here's another. This is a Greek word. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this one. Arete. You know that word? Arete. Arete. Anybody know that one?
I do.
What is that?
Does it mean perfect?
Close. It means excellence. Excellence. The top. Arete. The high standard. It comes from the world of battle. You know, valor, vigor, victory, quality, arete, excellence. And those in healthcare set very, very high standards. Do they not? Joseph? The standards are very, very high. And those who work in healthcare have to rise to the standard, not the other way around. The standards do not come down.
Why do they use the word arete instead of excellence?
Oh, that's the Greek word. I mean, there's few who would know that word in that work in healthcare today. But I just found that in the history and see how it fits. Arete. So the students at OIT, where Mary Jane was just retired as director of health services at a college there in Klamath Falls called Oregon Institute of Technology, and I teach there. And the technologies, the healthcare technologies are strong at that college, and the students, they want to be elite. They want their nice cars and their nice lifestyle. And, you know, they want a place in the hospital politics that is above the other guys. And you know, they have this inside of them, and they don't really know where it's coming from or why, but. We try to fit this together. Arete, you know, this is all the way through our history. It's a big value. And one more thing out of the Romans and the Greeks and their politics. The Greeks had a democracy, right? Some initial forms of a democracy where the people had a voice. And in Rome, it was the Republic. The Romans had a Republic where they had elected representatives choose and make decisions for them. And this system is still here, right? We have an American system, democratic and republican concepts that are important in America and very important in healthcare. Now we're going to come through time a little bit and show more of how these are important, how they fit with healthcare. So there's the Greeks and the Romans. What's the next period after the Romans? What's the great period that followed the Roman Empire?
The Middle Ages.
Yeah, the Holy Roman Empire, right? So the society of Western civilization was dominated by the church, right? And the Holy Roman Empire had certain values. What was the number one value of the Holy Roman Empire?
Keeping Otto as emperor.
You're above me on that one. Was it not Christ's values? You know, to live as Christ lived, to... And so we had the first hospitals. The Greeks and Romans really didn't have hospitals. The Romans took care of their soldiers. The strongest element of healthcare in the Roman Empire was for the armies, because they needed those armies to keep power. So they took care of the soldiers as they could, but the Greeks and Romans didn't have hospitals. They had some kind of temples and healing of some kinds, but it was minor compared to what all this stuff was gradually building up to. But now we see the Holy Roman Empire, and that's when the first hospitals were built. The first one, anybody know where or when? Where was the first hospital that we know of in the world?
It was a hospital in about 350 in Cappadocia, in what we call today Turkey.
Turkey? Oh, well, you got me on that one. I don't know about that one. In France.
I understand that Basil of Caesarea founded a hospital there.
Yeah. Okay, hospice, you mentioned hospice, hospitality, hospitium. Okay, these books are talking about the Crusades in the medieval ages when soldiers went to fight the bad guys in the Holy Land, and on the way were in the battles were hurt and injured, and so the Pope said, hey, take care of these people, these travelers, these warriors, and put them up in your homes, heal their, you know, their wounds if you can. So this concept of hospitium, hospitality, hospital, first became part of the culture during the Middle Ages, during these the Holy Wars. And in France, there was one Hôtel Dieu, you know, Hotel of God, 14 or 13 something, formal place where monks and nuns took care of the ill and the injured. And it was soldiers coming back from the Holy Wars where this was their first patients. So the word, there's the word hospital, hospitality, hospitium. And it was a concept based on our religion, the religion of the times, and the message or the mission that, you know, we were to heal the sick as Jesus would. Heal the sick as Jesus would. The miracles performed by Christ, healing the sick, the leper, rising from the dead. Maybe it was going a little too far, but that definitely was the Christian value that dominated Europe at that time, that built up the hospitals. Now, looking at the Renaissance, what happened in the Renaissance? We saw people of that era, Michelangelo and those people, looking back. Where did they look back and rediscover? What period of time did they rediscover?
The Greeks and the Romans.
The Greeks and the Romans, the classic period. And they found that to be quite exciting. That there was this battle between the classics of the Greek and Roman against the church. Church versus state, science versus religion, and we had our first universities develop in the Middle Ages, right? In the Renaissance. What could you major in? If you went to college in the Middle Ages, in Italy, there were only three majors. What were they?
Theology.
Law.
Medicine.
And medicine. Three majors. That was the first universities. Theology, law, and medicine.
If you were a man.
Yeah.
If you were a man.
You didn't go to the university.
The women didn't go. Okay. And what language were the classes taught in?
Latin.
And where did they get Latin?
Church.
Back out of the Middle Ages. I mean, out of the classics. Yeah, the church kept it alive. And it was the language of the church and the Romans and the Greeks. So our universities took on a scientific approach to life, teaching, in medicine, and in law, you know, here's that big word, the R word, reason, and theology. Okay, so there was still maybe some reasoning going on in theology.
We should hope so.
And so medicine developed as a science, starting with the Renaissance and the first universities. Let's jump ahead now to, so here's a value, right? This is a value. Science is now an important value. Reason is an extremely important value. And physicians and those in healthcare, if we want to call it that, consider this to be pretty important. Let's jump to the colonial period now. Madison and Jefferson and Washington and those guys, Franklin. Where did they take their lead in what they wanted to see here in the colonies? Where did they look back to? What periods of time? What did they bring forward to the colonies? They didn't want the king, right? They had enough of that. No more king, where the king owned 95% of everything and represented, you know, royalty was what, less than 5% of the population, but owned 95% of the land and all the wealth. So they said, we're not having kings over here. No king. What do we do instead? Where did they turn for their model for the colonies?
Huh? You said Greece had a democracy, so they might have looked at Greece.
Yeah, they did, yeah. They looked at Greece and Rome. And they brought forward this idea of the republic, a democratic republic. What does this have to do with healthcare? Well, I'm really impressed. I learned about this in a graduate program that I participated in healthcare administration. But I worked at hospitals for, you know, some time before becoming aware of this, and there's a lot of my colleagues that, you know, never really studied this or never heard much about it, but it's really impressive to me. So if we look at the American model, and we see that Franklin and Jefferson and Washington, these guys had no king. They did not want this big shot on top and everything falling underneath. So what did they do instead? How do we manage to balance things off so we never have a chance of a king coming up in America? How do we keep that from happening? So what do we call this? Is this checks and balances, or, you know, these trilogies, these groups of three? So if we look at the American way, what do we see in government? What do we have? Three branches in government.
Legislative,
executive,
judicial.
By design, right? The Romans had something similar, but here they are. Why three? No king. We're not going to let this president become so powerful that he begins to think he is a king. We're going to have the courts and the legislators to make sure that power and decisions are not in the hands of any one person or one entity. Okay, what else? So that's just in government. Now, Franklin and Madison, but I guess they all kind of like this idea. And it's surprising to me that it's not more widely known, but they saw three sectors in America. They wanted three sectors, not just one. And these sectors, I'm not sure that you have any idea what these three sectors might be. I'll tell you, government is one. We have a society of three sectors. What would be the other two?
Is one agriculture?
Well, agriculture fits into one sector. What sector? Well, agriculture, Holden Mine, IBM, Microsoft. Yeah, the entrepreneurial sector. Americans, they said, deserve the merit of their own effort. They don't have to give it away to the king. If you work hard, you get to keep it. Entrepreneurship, right? The private sector, we call that. So we have one sector we call the private sector. Private enterprise. And we can own our own land. We can own our house. We can start a company. Okay, the private sector. If you decide to, and agriculture, perfect example. You know, if you decide to work that hard, take all those risks, grow those crops and harvest them, you deserve them, the rewards for that. Likewise, you deserve the losses if you don't do it right. Don't blame someone else. You blew it. Okay, very strong American value. Is that not? We couldn't imagine America without that. Okay, government, we said, is the second sector. And those founding fathers wanted limited role for government. Pass the laws. Defend the country. They had a limited role because their fear of, you know, what was in England happening. Again, they didn't want anything like that. Now, this third sector, what could be this third sector?
The church.
Nonprofit charity.
Yeah, nonprofit charity. And we call that the voluntary sector. This doesn't write too good. So that's America. The way the framers of the Constitution wanted it to be. They put some thought into it, they looked back, they brought up some values preferable to what they had seen in England, what they had left behind. So they wanted this private sector, government sector, voluntary sector. And they said all three are important, but none of the three should dominate. And so this voluntary sector, what did they mean by that? What do you mean voluntary sector? What's a voluntary about it? What does that have to do with anything? We say private nonprofit. What is that? What are we getting at there? What's the value behind
service?
Service. Service to others, not personal gain. Personal gain, that's over here. Private sector. I built it. I grew it. I want the profit. I earned it. Okay, now, the guy, maybe who was very successful at that, comes around and says, I want to do something to help others because it's important. I want to help others. So that's now what we call voluntary, the voluntary sector. The charitable nonprofit corporation, the private nonprofit corporation. Private means it's not government. Government is public. Everything we call public means government. But this voluntary sector is private. Means it's not public. Privately held by people who care enough to do something on their own that doesn't need to be done, or I shouldn't say doesn't need, but isn't required by law to be done. So we're passing laws in this second sector, the government sector, but now we come over here in the private sector. Well, it's not a law, it's because I choose to do this. I choose to form a college, Harvard College, because we want to teach, we want young people to have a formal education. Now I choose to form Holden Village because we want a place for people to gather. It's voluntary. I choose to come here and volunteer my time and work because it's helpful to the community. I choose, I voluntarily choose. That's our voluntary sector. Private, nonprofit, independent, charitable, 501c3. You know, the Boy Scouts, the YMCA, the churches, the Lutheran Church is a 501c3 corporation, right? So the government has set in its rules the protection of this concept. So there's no tax paid on any excess revenues over expenses that Holden Village might have left over at the end of the year. There's no tax on that to the federal government. If someone is employed here, Martin, Susan are employed, they pay tax on their income. But Holden Village as a corporation does not pay tax. So why is all this important to healthcare? Where's the connection to healthcare? Three sectors. What's so important about that voluntary sector for healthcare?
Well, historically, most of the hospitals were founded by voluntary organizations.
That's right.
By government or for profit.
That's right.
In contrast to the present situation. But originally, churches and other groups founded hospitals, orphanages, mm-hmm. Homes for people, elderly, various kinds of needs.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah, so it may not seem like that today, but it's still, you know, it is our history, and it's a critically important value. It's a very, very American value. They don't have this in Moscow. So we do have an American value of these three sectors, and the hospitals primarily came from that voluntary sector. And most hospitals remain in that. There are some government hospitals, and there are some privately owned hospitals. But out of the 7,000 hospitals in America, about 85 to 90% are in that voluntary sector. Now think of your last experience with a hospital. What was the name of that hospital, and what sector of those three does it fit? You think what hospital may have you? Kim, what hospital did your mom, was she in?
She was in a Swedish hospital, and I don't know the starting of it, but I think it might have been a volunteer situation.
With Swedish hospital. What would you imagine would be the history of Swedish hospital?
Norwegian
church. Norwegians.
Place to send them after we buy it.
It was the Lutheran church? Was it?
Was it Minneapolis?
Was it the Lutheran church? It was
It sounds like maybe people who cared about Swedish people enough to start a hospital to help their Swedish people who became ill and injured. What other hospitals have you had experiences with? Where would be its heritage?
County hospital.
County hospital. Government. What other government hospitals are there?
University hospital.
Military.
VA. University hospital. A university hospital is government sponsored. Oregon Institute of Technology, government sponsored, higher education.
VA,
government sponsored.
St. Joseph.
What sector?
Right, you can be government.
Huh? Catholic.
Yeah, religious hospitals are all private, nonprofit. Their mission is to heal the sick as Jesus would.
They're no longer nonprofit.
No, most of them are.
Most of them are.
Many of them are no longer nonprofit. They create things to take the profit and put other places, but many of them are making a great profit today, including St. Joe's Hospital.
Well, let's look at, make sure we understand that business sense of things. What we're talking about here with profit, what do we mean by profit? But American business, we're back in that first sector over here, says profit. Okay, there's just, you know, why does a corporation exist? To make a profit, right? That's an American business definition. The entity does not exist for some other primary purpose. It exists to make a profit, otherwise it has no other. It just doesn't get a chance to have another purpose. It has to make a profit. It has to have money left over after paying the bills to keep things going.
To pay the stockholders.
To pay the investors, the owners, who want that, you know, they're taking the risk, they're doing the work, they want that reward. Some of them now just invest, they don't do the work, but they want that reward. Well, so just in running your own family checkbook, right, you know, you get down your deposits and your withdrawals, you need to keep it in black ink, right? You need to have a little more there than your bills, or you're in trouble. Well, the same over here. This nonprofit corporation has to have more money left over than it pays for its expenses. It just has to. It can't replace things that wear out. It can't add new services. It can't give people a raise. It just can't keep up with the times unless it has profit left over. But the difference is that this profit has to pay a tax to the U.S. government. The tax comes to the government on the profit. What's left goes to the shareholders or the investors. And over here, there is no tax on that profit. But it's still, as a business, when we look at the business of healthcare, it's all got to work the same American dollars, same principles of accounting. Now, these values, what we're trying to get at with these values is that there are so many forces pushing and pulling against healthcare today that people aren't happy. People are fearful. People see things changing so much, they don't want to be associated, or they want to retire, they want to do something else, or they, you know, there's so many pressures from the fear, the power, and the money today that those tend to be the front page stories. And yet when we look at healthcare, it's a wonderful heritage, it's a wonderful history, and it's a beautiful thing, America's healthcare system. I very much respect what we have here in America. I think it generally, overall, it works awfully well. But there definitely are these weaknesses, these pushing and pulling of forces that tear people apart sometimes. But on the other hand, prolong life, let us enjoy our grandchildren, you know, give us the flexibility, the freedom to provide for our families. You know, there really are some wonderful, wonderful rewards from American healthcare. But today, maybe that's not what we think of first. So that's how I wanted to start this with you, and to look more at these threats and these positives. And as we go through the week, you know, what do you bring to it? How does healthcare affect you? You know, how do you think about it? How do you view it? How do you participate in your own health? What is it about Holden that can strengthen that, our health? You know, this is our renewal. This is our, you know, our zing, you know, our little extra zing that we go back with. And what can we take back in our own health and the way we participate in the health of our families, our communities, our hospitals, our, you know, our medical system here, that keeps us in, you know, keeps us on the focused on the right stuff.
I think one of the problems that people who would tend to come to Holden would have a concern about would be the millions of people who don't have insurance coverage that would pay for a private hospital or a free enterprise medical doctor, medical system, and they fall through the cracks, so they can't go to a hospital and get the kind of care that most of us can because we have insurance that would pay for that. And might see it as a societal responsibility, namely government responsibility, to make it possible for every American to get adequate health care, both preventive and therapeutic treatment.
Along with what he's saying, our founding fathers 200 years ago had this dream. 100 years later, they felt that there was one element lacking in that dream, and that was a public education. So they formed laws throughout each of the states between 1860 and 1880 on developing a responsibility for the state to educate all of the people, not just the wealthy, not just the ones that could go to the private schools, not just the ones that could go to the church schools, but everyone. Everyone in America had a right to a free public education.
Did they think of women at that time?
I don't think that it was brought out in the legislation defining men and women. The constitutions of the various states stipulate that all children will be educated. Whether it was enforced back then is questionable. Is it enforced today? Oh yes, it is enforced today. But possibly, in relating to what you were saying, maybe it's time in our society for our government to realize that there might be a missing second element, and that is the health care of all of our people. When we talk about health care, it's not just us in our working years. Every one of us in here has known a relative that has gone on to the geriatric age, gone into a nursing home, and what happens when they go to a nursing home? All of their funds are wiped out. Immaterial how much money they have. Once they're finally broke, then the state continues to take care of them. But
most nursing homes are not covered by Medicare or other insurance plans, so the family has to pay, or the patient has to pay a monthly charge. And what happens to some families is that their savings are depleted when a chronic illness may require a nursing home's care for a period of months or years.
But we're the only country in the world that has a...
That has a nursing home?
No, that has that system of taking from our seniors their life savings for their elder care.
Well, we have a healthcare system that is capitalistic and private nonprofit. It's uniquely capitalistic and nonprofit.
Denmark.
Denmark. What's the system in Denmark? What's it called? System of
health. I don't know if you can say. I mean, everybody has health care in Denmark.
Yeah, what do you call that?
What's socialized medicine.
Socialized medicine.
Socialized medicine. And who provides the system, the policy for that? The government,
the
right?
The government does.
The government. So why does Denmark and Germany and Norway and Sweden, why do they have national health care policies like that, socialistic, and America does not?
Because they don't have the Wild West mentality that America has. It
says, that's a good way.
If you go earn it, you get it. And if you don't have the money and can't earn it, you don't. We apply that to all kinds of things, and certainly the health care.
Well, fortunately, we didn't for education.
Well, we did originally, until 100 years ago. Until 100 years ago, the educator was the wealthy person in the community.
Right. I understand.
And the educator, the doctor in the community was the barber who had a bottle of leeches to work with. But we felt that our children needed to learn to read and write.
In fact, that's why in England, surgeons will not let you call them doctor, because the barbers were the surgeons who bloodlet people. And when the surgeons were so insulted by that, that they refuse to accept the word doctor. So no surgeon in England is to be called doctor. You call him Mr. Choice, Mr.
I went into a school in Denmark, in Copenhagen, and in the school, there's a doctor's or a dentist's chair. The dentist comes to the school and examines all of the children for their dental needs.
That is true.
And if there is a need, they don't make an appointment. They're right there and they fix it.
That's right.
The dentist is not in a free enterprise. He's assigned to that school by the state. Mm-hmm. That's his assignment. All of the children in Denmark, I would assume, have dental care and they have healthy teeth. I wish we could say the same for all the children in America.
Wait, every 6 months you are going to the school dentist. That's right.
Maybe a big difference, I don't know this, about European countries, but I think the current state of healthcare in this country is dominated by an arrangement that came about because of contractual deals between large corporations and unions. I think the car companies were very important in that. And so we have a system where your health care is locked into your employment for almost everybody. And it probably doesn't matter in Denmark where you work.
No.
Right. I don't know whether other countries do it that way. And that, I think, is at the root of this awful mess that we're in. Is because this came about kind of innocently. We blundered into it. People didn't realize what was happening. General Motors says, okay, we'll give the union this, we'll agree to provide this health care, and it grew and grew and grew, and things didn't cost so much in those days. But this happened over a rather short period of time, and now, if you are not in the right position regarding employment, you are in deep trouble regarding health care.
Yeah.
And if you have a pre-existing illness, you are in trouble.
Yeah.
That is a big.
Doesn't that limit two of the three legs of the stool? The business, and the volunteer, and it becomes a government healthcare?
Well,
America has elected or planned they would have a three stool. Oh, we have three legs on
right,
the stool.
Right, but when you talk about Norway or Denmark or Germany, they got one.
Yeah,
but when you talk about the three legs, aren't you really talking about two legs and one with a subsection?
You want to put the private nonprofit over here with the private?
Well,
for profit.
To what extent, if they draw from the for profit, they should draw equally from the government if it's truly the third leg, shouldn't it? Shouldn't you have the volunteers coming both from the government and from the for-profit sector if it is truly a third leg?
The government
authorizes the nonprofit, so the government's involved from that perspective.
Yeah, they're definitely. Yeah,
you can't get that status.
Medicare or Medicaid, for example, are huge dollars.
Right. So the government is paying a lot of money for medical care right now. It's just that it's not a total care. It's only for the poor and the elderly, right? Medicaid and Medicare.
Right, those are national policies, national programs.
Okay, but they have the military and then.
Okay, but they're also paying the VA, the military,
and government employees and so on.
And then who's paying the rest? It's that
private insurance
for the working person. Yeah, so it's spread out a little bit here. In Denmark, it's concentrated. The government's paying for everything. And the taxes are coming from everybody to the government. The government's paying the health care.
Do you know if the comparative fees, say, with Denmark and the U.S., what it costs for an operation, or can you say anything about that?
I wouldn't know about the particulars.
I talked with a doctor in Copenhagen, and he equated that he was assigned an area as a general practitioner, and he had regular office hours. He made home visits, and his income was a little over $60,000 a year. My wife's brother has a friend who just graduated from the University of Washington Med School in rehabilitation, went to North Seattle Community Hospital to work half time till they got a practice started. His half-time salary for the first month was $15,000, which equates to almost $200,000 a year right out of med school to work part-time. That's a yardstick you can measure against.
But your biggest problem with health care is the cost?
The cost.
Yeah. How many would agree with that? What's your biggest problem with American health care?
Well, first of all, the cost of the insurance.
No way.
Cost in case you need health care.
Okay.
The biggest thing.
My biggest problem are those who cannot get care.
That's right.
Access?
That is too big a conflict. This country, in my opinion, has the most advanced technology. Yeah. And then we have people who cannot get health care.
The biggest problem is that we look at this, the medical care situation in this country, as an economic issue, and what we do not look at it as a moral issue. Is it okay to deny care to millions of people? But that's not really, that's not the dominant argument that we carry on. It's money. It's what does it cost?
You go back to the philosophy that I mentioned of 100 years ago. Do we deny education to everyone except those who can afford to pay for it? Or do we provide it for everyone? Because as a society, as a government, we owe that to our people.
But you can't do anything about it now. There were not, in those days, huge amounts of money and organized lobbies making sure that they didn't provide education for everybody. And now we can't change it because we are at that point. Lots of money is spent to make sure that we do not provide health care for everybody.
Yes, that's true. But are we not empowered to be able to change that? I think eventually we are going to have to change that.
I can't think of a better thing for churches to work on than this single issue.
In Canada, they have a single payer system. Paul Wollstone from Minnesota wanted to push for a single pay system in the United States, but there are terrific political forces. Mm-hmm. I'm part of the AMA and the institution, but I don't agree with. I'm one of the few doctors in St. Paul that are Democrat. But we have now, the AMA is, I think, not very powerful, but the insurance companies are very powerful. And I think my doctor friends are lamenting. I've been retired 6 years, so I don't care. But they're lamenting that they can't earn as much money as they used to, and they're told what to charge. Well, they're told what they're going to be given, and they work more hours and earning less money. Poor guys, they're still starving. But they'll do fine. But it's not as rewarding as it used to be for them. But the biggest thing, I think, is the insurance companies, and it's, I don't know how big their lobby is or how much influence they have in Washington, but I think it must be tremendous.
Well, that's interesting that you're sitting here next to Paul. Yes.
I come from that.
He's in that side of things.
And yes, that the insurance company has a great amount of political clout. As much as the AMA, I would disagree. I would say no. Sitting down and negotiating with a hospital or a group of physicians. We want preferred provider networks. We want discounts. We want access to things that the doctors don't necessarily want to give us access to.
And when you get the discounts, the cost of care for people who don't have insurance goes up, because it has to come from somewhere.
Not really.
Oh, come on.
No. And I can give you a prime example for that. I negotiated with a group of hospitals in Pierce County that I would not, my group, and I was working with just about 10,000 folks, our group would not pay for standby equipment. You're aware of the standby charges. You have a particular piece of equipment sitting in the hall, and 15 patients on that hall are billed for it because it's standing there, whether they use it or not. And I said, well, no. I don't want to be billed for that unless one of our patients actually uses it. Then bill us for it, but don't bill us for the standby.
So how do they pay for it?
How do they pay for it
since you won't pay them when they don't use it?
It's paid for the first week it's in the hospital.
But you're not...
And from then on, it becomes the profit.
But when you negotiate the lower rate, they're the people in your group. Now I come in and I have no insurance. And I'm going in like...
Well, you're going to pay a much higher rate than I do.
Yeah, this is the moral issue.
Yes.
A much higher rate.
Why is this not, to the hospitals and to the doctors, a moral issue that the person whose employer does not pay his insurance is charged much more for the same service?
That's the way the car is driven. I will come into his hospital and I will say, I'm representing 10,000 people. You give me what I want, or I'm not going to use your hospital.
It's not a moral issue.
I go to his hospital.
Is it to you a moral issue that the people who don't have insurance are charged more for the same service?
See, what you're getting at is what drives health care. You're saying
pure money.
You want to see
pure money drives it.
But that's not what you want to see.
No.
You want to see moral issues drive health care, right? And he's saying, well, we live in a capitalistic society, and business is business, and. So you're saying, well, business kind of drives healthcare. That's what this week's series is about. And just to conclude, our time is just about up. We can keep talking about this. But this is where the debate is. This is where, and the reason to look at these values, the historical values, is to say, what is our heritage? You know, what is it business? Is it morals? You know, our heritage is that good stuff that you're talking about. And we're going to look. By Friday, we want to get to the heart of healthcare. Where is the real heart of healthcare? And to get there, we're going to look at some things outside of medical books. We're going to look at a poem by William Blake. We're going to look at a scriptural passage, The Walk to Emmaus. And we're going to see these two factors battling against each other all week, and what may be, you know, our way to figure out our guide, you know, our path along this journey. Now we can continue that debate, because it's loaded with details as to why things work the way they do, and who's up against whom, and what pressure is forcing what deals. That's hot stuff.
Yes.
Good.
Can I just bring up one thing? And we're talking about the government now. Okay. The government promised most veterans medical care. Most of them will never get medical care. They're means tested and everything else. They promised their military government guided lifetime. They're stopping government military care at 65. They're not having military hospitals treat them. They're charging HMO costs if you do want it, if you're military retired. So the government is breaking most of the rules that they have. A lot of these people are now going into the business to get their medical insurance. And a lot of them have planned on it for the future. And that's so the poor were not getting that. The military, the VA, the veterans, and everything else had it. They're taking it away, yet they're now saying, well, take it away from the veterans and give it to the poor. Mm-hmm. So someone's going to get cheated one way or the other. And if you talk about Norway, Denmark, and so forth, which has wonderful medical care, most of the rich in these countries wait for their medical care so long that they actually come to America to get the medical care.
Yes, that's right.
You talk about Canada.
Canada's
so, same way. People in Canada are on lists for 6, 8, 10 months they come to America and pay. So you're always going to have a business side, because they're going to get their money whether they get from the Americans or whatever. Somebody's got to go. So trust in the government to run the whole medical care system is not a very good idea either.
Okay.
I mean, in my viewpoint.
Yes.
I'd like to look at what it would take on the part of this country to start insuring kids, because kids are the future of this country, and make sure all kids have what they need.
Not just kids, all Americans.
Well, but we need to start with kids.
Well, that, it did start in 1965 with Lyndon Johnson, and you were, you know, Lyndon Johnson, the Great Society. Remember, America was a wealthy country because World War II had devastated Europe. America just got bigger and stronger and wealthier because of it. 1965, the Great Society. We can do more for our people. Let's do it as a national policy. Let's take care of children and the elderly. Medicare and Medicaid were the two health care programs to pay for that. So since 1965, America has had a national health policy for children, and billions of dollars have been spent for children.
But aren't there still a lot of children who are not, who have no access to health care?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Well, what there are lots of children from families who are not on the poverty rolls, and the parent has to choose whether to pay the rent this month or to take the kid down to the doctor to get treated. And but they have not been through the system. They are not on Medicaid. There are millions of children and adults in that category, but they are off over the horizon for us. We don't see them. We don't really talk about them very much. We just leave them out there, and we let them worry about whether they're going to pay the rent or buy the food or take the kid in to get
healthcare. Well, that happens to a lot of parents now. I mean, there's a certain amount of expenses not covered by a plan, a health plan of one kind or another, whether it's private or government. And those parents, you know, here's the stack of bills, which ones get paid, which ones don't. Well, let's leave out that doctor bill in the hospital. Well, those can ride for a while. But do they get the care? You know, there is an awful lot of care provided.
Well, when you see people using the emergency rooms because they couldn't afford to get the preventive stuff done, then you know it's not happening.
And that's very expensive.
For parents that don't take the children to the dentist, and things turn into toothaches, and then it's to the emergency room on Saturday night, and poor choice on the parents' part.
Well, it's very expensive to go to the dentist.
Yeah, but it's not just the government, not just the parents. It's, you know, there's so many things. I'd suggest health care is is one of our scenarios, one of our, you know, the stages where life is played out. And everything spiritual, everything that from the other sessions that we've discussed this morning can apply to health care. From Duane's Bible study this morning, the prophets, what did the prophets rail against? He said was callousness and authority. Okay, and that's, you play that out in healthcare, it's, you know, you can play that out real, real well. Every session, there was one, what was it in your session?
Made me think about it. Talked about spirituality and what it means.
Yeah. And spirituality, is there, you know, in our relationships with each other, physicians, nurses have relationships with people on a very intimate level. Life and death matters, strong fear. You know, there's where we find the heart of healthcare. And when you're in that situation, there's where the attention, you know, most often that's where the attention is it not? These other concerns can be the matter of discussion at our seminars and things, but when it's your daughter who's on the table and you don't know what's wrong and it's serious, and she, you know, there's attention of the professionals, the parents, that's when people come from the heart.
I'd just like to comment that I think the term health care is a propaganda term for the medical industry. And the way we've been speaking about it here has been provide medical health care, we mean professional, nurse, doctor, institution. But I think that health care is largely unpaid, not public, etc. It's when health care involves everything that I do to eat right, exercise, have loving relationships. None of those appear on the sheets of the insurance companies or so on. And health care involves when the mother picks up her child in the middle of the night, or the father takes the child to here and there. All of these things, in a wider sense, to what we care for our health, impacts everything we do in our lives.
That's good.
Yeah, so it isn't great. Just that institution that's or great. That degree professional.
That's great. You're bringing us right back to where we started when we defined it. Now, if you just look at the economic definition, if you look at the scientific definition, the political definition, right, but I'm suggesting we look at healthcare as the struggle to do good in the face of the inherent imperfections of humanity.